Welcome to the New Wolsey Theatre podcast. I'm Jack.
I'm Zanna.
And I'm Catherine. Come with us behind the scenes where we take you backstage, on stage, front of house and everywhere in between.
The Lies You Tell is a co-production between the New Wolsey Theatre, the Theatre Royal Bury and High Tide, and has been commissioned by Suffolk County Council.
Today is a great day because we have with us the director and the cast from The Lies You Tell, and they're going to introduce themselves as should be. Nathan.
Hi, I'm Nathan. I'm the director for The Lies You Tell.
I'm Jordan. I'm one of the actors.
I'm Richard. I'm one of the actors.
I'm Afia. I'm one of the actors.
And Jack's here too.
Hello. Yes, I'm here. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about yourselves? We'll start with you, Nathan. Where you live, why you love your job, a story about why you got into this as a career. Off you go.
Yeah, of course. So I live in Liverpool at the moment. So I grew up in South London in Streatham. I've been living in Liverpool for about 4.5 years now. I think I started working in theatre maybe about 8 years ago. I say 8 years ago because the years before that, I was trying to be an actor like these guys.
We can tell a bit there.
Yeah. I was really good at playing myself. I realised that wasn't going to get me very far, so I thought I'd jump ship. I suppose I just always loved storytelling, and I didn't really understand the best way to tell stories or how I could tell stories as a career. And then I did a school play once, like as a joke, because I was that kid. And I was like, oh, this isn't a joke. This is great. This is amazing. And I don't get told off for playing and being silly and having fun. It just sort of went from there, learning on the job. Like I said, stumbling through acting and finding, I think, where I belong at the moment as a writer and a director.
You hear that a lot, though. A lot. Yeah.
It's the job that we see first, isn't it? It's the one that feels most recognizable to us. Mm. It's the people that we see on our screens or on our stages. Yeah. So we think, oh, I want to do that. I want to be a part of that. Mm. And then it's just brilliant to see all of the other things that go into making this magic happen. Mm.
Which you do make happen.
We try.
Jordan.
Well, I'm the same. I grew up in South London, mm-hmm. Bermondsey. Not a lot of people know where that is, but...
We do.
Okay. Yeah. For those who don't know, Google it. I grew up in Bermondsey. I lived in Bristol for like 3 years when I was 18. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really an acting person when I was growing up. I was like the sports side of things. I used to do sports a lot. And like when I was in school, I was more like music. I studied music for GCSEs because it was either drama or GCSEs.
Yeah.
So I just went the music route. And then when I was in college, I went a completely different direction. I'd done, sports science.
That is slightly different.
Yeah. Sports and exercise science. I didn't really enjoy it though, but I did it at the same time. Mm. I don't know. It was weird. Mm. And then, after college, I moved to Bristol. Because my brother was out in Bristol playing basketball for like the professional team in Bristol. Right. And then I stayed with him for a bit. And the college that he was playing at offered like an acting course like for 2 years. So I jumped on that. And then they done like an outreach thing where like people from drama schools will go to like rural cities out of London to audition people. And then the drama school that I graduated from recently, one of the ladies there came and she auditioned me. And then at first she was going to walk away. And then my teacher, the tutor at college said, no, you need to like audition these guys and like look at them properly. And then she took me on for a foundation course. Long story short, I went to drama school and then the rest is history.
And what was it about the course that, you know, when you were with your brother, what was it that made you kind of turn your attention to that if you'd never really thought of it before?
No, it's because obviously, like, when I was 18, I didn't know what I wanted to do because I was fresh out of, like, college.
Well, who does?
What I mean. Yeah. And I was going to go uni, but I felt like I was, like, rushing into it. Mm. And then, obviously, I was like, no, just relax for a bit. And then I said to my brother, I wanted to, like, do something else. And he was like, well, I play at this college. Come check it out and then see what courses they have. They didn't really have a lot. They had, like, forensic science and all them boring jobs. There was like all these courses and then I saw acting because I used to like enjoy it in school, but I didn't think like you could make do a career. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't think like I could like do it as a career.
Yeah.
But then obviously I just went into it and then and enjoyed it. And then, yeah.
And here you are.
Yep.
Here I am. Yeah.
Richard.
Hi. I'm currently living in Woolwich in Southeast London. I've been in Packham the last 3 years. Yeah. I grew up in Reading in Berkshire. Mm-hmm. And the reason I got into acting originally, I wasn't into it at all. I was more like maths and physics. That was like the route I thought I was going to go down. But then I auditioned for the school play for the first time because I had a crush on the girl.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this is how I get the girl. I'm going to get into this play. It was Les Mis, by the way.
Yeah. So
going great.
I watched an episode of Family Guy that was a mirror of that the other day. Literally the exact same plot.
My life is. So I auditioned for Les Mis under these false pretenses, and then I got into the show and she didn't. So then I was stuck in a show that I didn't care about for a girl who was not in the show.
The drama.
And so I had to commit to the show, and I ended up enjoying myself and finding this thing that I properly liked. And then from there, it just became more and more of a thing that I enjoyed. And I guess my enjoyment of it was down to just like the way people can connect when they act, and not just when they act, but when they kind of have the openness required to act good and to act like truthfully. It's just, it's a different type of connection. I feel like it's something that we lose quite a lot in real life. Mm. Like, it's that ability to just like drop it, whatever it is, like just drop our guard and drop our boundaries and stuff like that and just kind of be.
Mm.
And I guess, yeah, I use it almost as like a, vice. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Just as a thing that's just like, it's nice. It can be addictive almost to just like drop it. Whatever it is, just drop it. Sometimes it just, you know, talk. It's nice. So yeah, that's why I enjoy it and that's why I got into it.
Where is she now?
She, I ain't gonna tell you. She doesn't know this.
She's the
character of the story. She's my friend to this. If you hear this, pretend like you didn't.
So I grew up in central London, and then moved out into like Hertfordshire when I was 14. And my whole thing was like academia as well. Like I was going to be a lawyer, did all my like GCSEs and A-levels with that in mind, although I randomly threw drama in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's have a fun one. And then went to, uni, did law, graduated, did a year abroad studying law in France. Like I was going to become a lawyer. After you do the degree, you have to, do another course to become the barrister. So I interviewed, I applied, whatever, I got offered the place and I was like absolutely horrified suddenly by the prospect of sitting at a desk for 20 years and doing legal things.
Yeah.
So give me that life of poverty.
I ran away from the money. I ran away from all the money. And I went to a part-time acting school called Identity in London.
Mm-hmm.
I was working kind of full-time in corporate and stuff, sort of pay for it, and life. And did that for, sort of intermittently for a couple of years. And then, the panoramic happened.
What?
That's one way to call
it. The pandemic hit and sort of cut my, training short. And so I kind of was wondering what to do with myself and I was suddenly just dealt like handed corporate solely, and I was like, this is going to kill me. So quit last March, started emailing and looking around for an agent, got an agent, and have been working sort of like in the past year.
Yeah.
An actor, which has been, amazing.
It's a bit of talent around this table, apart from the acting and the directing. Moving on, Jack.
Yeah, to the show now, The Lies You Tell. It's a really, really lovely piece. We saw it here, I don't know, it was probably around May time, I think, that I came into rehearsals and watched the run. It's such a lovely piece. Could you tell us just a little bit more about it?
So the play is about a 14-year-old boy from London who moves to Suffolk to live with his aunt and uncle because his mum has been sent to prison. And it's about him sort of living in Suffolk, kind of acclimatizing to the new space, but also trying to hide the fact that his mum's in prison. So he tells kind of magnificent lies about where she is, but it all sort of crumbles. And it's about him handling that. But it's kind of was commissioned by New Orleans, Barry St. Edmunds, the theatre there, and Suffolk County Council and Mind,
and High Tide.
Thank you, shout out High Tide. and kind of with the intention of helping children sort of look at and consider their mental health sort of after the past 2 years. So it's, yeah, kind of got all those kind of elements of, you know, how you look after yourself, you know, how you express yourself, your feelings, but also lying, being honest, who to talk to, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that's the story.
Well, that's the end of the podcast. So Nathan, it's really important to take this play into these schools. What's it felt like when you've been going? I mean, you started off going, I realize you're the director, but tell us what that feels like.
It's special, you know. I think it's special for a couple of reasons. One is what Ashley was talking about there, about starting those conversations with young people about their mental health. So we go in and do the show, or these guys go in and do the show, and then run workshops alongside that. So being able to start those conversations feels really important, and have those open and courageous sometimes conversations with young people about how they can look after themselves. But also, I think these guys have just made a really beautiful piece of art. And I think actually with the whole creative team, this show that just pops up in schools is like a proper show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a proper show. And then it's just amazing for these young people to get to see, these artists come in, with the artists that have been behind the scenes making the work, presenting this beautiful thing. It's just really powerful. So as well as what it does for starting those conversations, it's also just a really brilliant piece of theatre that these young people are getting to experience in their schools. Some young people that would never seen theatre before, or for some people that this might be the only piece of theatre that they see for the next 20 years, you know what I mean? They get a really brilliant experience with this show that comes in, I think.
And the production value and the, you know, the qualities of it is really, really impressive. I think I remember school productions that we had that used to come in, and they were sort of, you know, anti-drugs or anti-bullying. And it was all sort of very much the man comes from behind the curtain, and there's no props, and it's very cheesy. So what do you think is the importance of having such a high quality performance come in as well? I don't know, Richard, maybe if you want to take that.
I think for the kids, like, especially because for a lot of them and a lot of the places we go to, it is their first ever impression of theatre. And I think when your first impression is something that isn't necessarily very triggering of anything or necessarily provoking, it can make you think less of theatre or think less of artistic things in general. So I think having something that's high production and feeling like something has been made for you and isn't being made well for you is very important as a kid to then get into things and get into not even just acting, but into directing, into these other directions of places that they can go.
And
it would have made a difference, Jordan, if, I mean, it wouldn't, because you are in the work that you are now. But imagine being that, how old are they? 9, 10?
About 9, 10, yeah.
Seeing that in front of you, how do you think that might have affected you at that age?
Well, it's a crazy one, because, well, not crazy, but it's just like, because obviously, more than anything, like, it's an all black cast as well, isn't it? So like seeing that as a black boy, a young 9, 10 year old black boy, and you look at that and it's almost like a mirror of like your life, innit? And like, yeah, it's just like, yeah, it does hit you because you're thinking that's exactly what I'm going through. And like, you know, it's almost like a prevention kind of thing, innit? So like growing up, like if you're living that life of like telling lies or trying to like hide behind something, it kind of prevents you from like actually like, you know, taking on that kind of like personality kind of thing, innit?
It's been really like, it's been wicked in, you know, we're touring around Bury and Ipswich and Suffolk. So often we'll go to schools and there might be like one black kid that's in the audience.
Sure.
And you see that validation for them, that actually there's these people that are coming and saying, my experience is important and I matter and I'm valued and I'm here, and look at all of the stuff that they're pouring into us. Like we spoke a bit at the start of the show about some of the really specific cultural references, and it's brilliant that they're there and that we're not trying to explain them or shy away from them or like, you know, sugarcoat them or make them a bit more palatable, whatever.
Yeah,
it's like, no, if you get it, you get it. And, you know, for you in the audience, and, you know, if you're a Nigerian kid sitting in the audience, you hear someone talking about Ebba and all of your peers don't get it, but you get it. That's special. You know, it feels like this thing is just for you, and that feels really important.
Yeah.
That has happened, actually. Like, we have normally sort of we're in quite close quarters with the kids, so some kind of come up to us.
A few of the kids were like telling me to speak now. Nigerian, like in a Nigerian. I was actually giving it to him and they were giving it back. I was like,
I can do my Nigerian accent.
But even just seeing that, like just the kids just looking up to you like that and just like, oh, yeah.
It's good, man. Yeah. My mum was actually like, I'm Nigerian too. And it's true because they're in places maybe where lots of their friends don't understand that at all. So to have it in their school with their friends as well. And their friends might get some of the other references to you. Like we've had people like on staff here who've gone, oh my gosh, I love One Piece just as much as T does. Or, you know what I mean? Like the anime is my whole thing. Like it impacts so many people in so many different ways, but when it's quite specific and niche and it still finds you, that feels really important.
I think the writing has been, I found it really impressive because like you said, there's so many different references that someone's going to connect to something across the line. You know, at some point someone will find something they go, oh, I like that. I get that. Even if the scene before they didn't understand what was going on. I don't know, for you guys individually, what about the piece do you connect with the most?
Yeah, I think probably what I connect with the most is about trying to live up to an idea of what people might perceive you as that isn't necessarily you, that I think T really struggles with. And I think what Yolanda has done in a really brilliant and beautiful way is give us that insight from T and what he's struggling with personally, but also seeing how that plays out. And, you know, when he's trying to play the tough kid or trying to play the cool kid, right inside, he just wants to run and hide, you know. There's these ideas and these stereotypes that are placed on you that sometimes in certain situations or environments, you feel like you have to play up to. So being able to see a story where actually it's just about, you know what, that's not important. You know, I'm older now, so I'm all right with being myself. Do you know what I mean? But thinking about it, seeing that in school when I was going through that stuff and trying to be something that I'm not, I think that's the bit that really resonated with me.
Yeah. Jordan?
I think just like the theme of the absence of like care.
Right.
But obviously like, because the aunt and uncle like show so much like love and like care for T, like despite T not wanting, I don't want to talk too much about it, but despite T like not wanting to like accept the love and care, I feel like that's what I connect with most, because I feel like kids, especially nowadays, like kids need a lot of attention and a lot of like guidance and just...
There's a lot of sort of negative things on social media or there's a lot of kind of things that kids can really easily pick up on. So I guess, like that guidance to kind of steer people in the right direction.
Yeah, or just to let the kids know, like, I'm here for you.
Yeah,
you
sure.
And obviously, like, parents could connect to this as well. People that are like minders, they can connect to this as well and make them realize, oh, if I'm not caring enough, I feel like I should be more caring and stuff. So sends that kind of message.
Yeah, I relate to so much of it, but I guess the big thing is kind of like T's inability to like ask for help, and like from how young you can feel that like pressure placed on you, especially as a man and especially as a black man or a black boy growing up. It's just like, you just feel like whatever issues or difficulties you're dealing with, you have to do it on your own. And it's like, even like to this day, and I think for a very long time, it just, it's there in the back of your head. It's this thing of like, I have to do it. It's no one can help me, but there's always help. There's always help. Yeah. It's just like, it's just one of those things. I don't know necessarily like what to pinpoint it as or where exactly it comes from, but it's just there and it's so potent, I find. And yeah, I just think that's something I relate to massively with T.
Sure.
I guess the character I play, T's best friend, Ari, is sort of a black girl growing up in a really quite rural, white area. And I think she finds it quite isolating. So I moved to Hertfordshire at the same age as Ari.
Right.
And so it was quite, it was really quite odd playing this character. And like her experiences in school and maybe not quite connecting with people. That was definitely me. So that was quite, that was really quite prominent for me in my mind and the things to connect to.
To Bury, you've been out to Bury early this year. How did that go?
Bury's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's really very nice.
Beautiful little town.
Town. Yeah.
It is a town.
I know that because there's Bury Town Football Club.
Got it. I think, yeah. That makes sense.
Most of my knowledge comes from football. So.
Bury's beautiful, and we had a really lovely. So we toured around the schools there, but then we had the opportunity to perform in the theatre and have a bunch of schools come and fill up the theatre.
Sure.
And that was a really fun show.
Yeah.
I think, you know, us going to their schools is exciting, but having the theatre experience for the kids as well, I think it really made it, it was really fun.
Yeah. Amazing.
and now Ipswich. When do you start? When do you start? When do you start?
Monday.
Monday. Yeah. Do you know where you're going first?
No. Yeah. No. To every
school
in
Ipswich. Yeah, you are.
It's a packed tour.
Yeah, and it is 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
6 weeks every day.
Yeah.
Of the week. Obviously, and probably two and sometimes three shows a day.
We're trying not to talk about this so much. We're not really helping right now. If we can move on, that'd be great.
Next question.
You've had a sort of an extended break over the summer where you've not been working on this show. Yeah. How easy does it, is it coming back and getting back into the loop of things again, sort of pick up the script? How much do you remember it?
A lot.
Yeah.
No, because obviously, like, when you're doing it every day, like, it just gets hardwired into you. But then obviously, like, there was a few, like, alterations, like, with the lines and that, just to cut it down a bit, just for, like, you know, for the kids, because obviously kids got to go back to class and that.
Sure.
They had to make it within the time frame.
They got my ass.
There was a few changes, but, you know, we adapted quick and, yeah. Mm. It's good.
Yeah. And I think with the amount of performances we did, like, it just really was just in our bones by the end of it. Like, we could, yeah. It felt like sometimes I go on autopilot, which is bad, but like, I'm just doing stuff like, oh, yeah, I'm here now. I'm good. Oh, I'm at this other school now. It's crazy. But yeah, it really just settles into your body at some point.
Yeah, Richard, that's your raw talent that's coming out there. Yeah.
And you say you go into that. You say you almost fall into a, you know, autopilot with it. How do you keep it fresh? If you notice that maybe one of the audience, because they're kids, their attention spans aren't as good as adults. If you look at them and you sort of see, well, generally, but you look out and you maybe sort of catch that some people aren't as engaged. What do you do to keep things fresh?
Well, I talk to the audience quite a lot throughout it. So I guess in terms of keeping it fresh, I mainly use just kind of like fear and shock. I tend to just like suddenly have a very quick gear change. So they're forced to go, whoa, what's happening now?
Sure, yeah.
And yeah, I think picking on kids and like finding one kid who maybe, you know, is really into it or, you know, is maybe really not into it. And just like, you know, like you, I'm forcing you to. Just kinda, I think force is the word.
Brilliant. But healthy.
Check. Healthy. I just want to put out that he is safe to talk to schools. He just has a,
but I know what you mean, sort of finding a way to kind of bring someone a little bit more personally into it and making it a bit more personable to them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Last question. Do you still like each other?
I'm joking. Yeah, we were fully prepared to live together for this second stretch.
Mm.
Yeah, we really enjoyed each other and the room's been so much fun.
Yeah, definitely. Well, at the meet and greet at the beginning of the this week, it was like long lost friends coming back together. It was amazing.
Yeah. Quite embarrassing.
But you walked towards me and went, hello!
I love
it. Arms out stretches up, we are going in for a hug.
I realised in that moment I didn't know you. I was just like in the hugging mode. I'm so sorry.
No, it was lovely. It was gorgeous.
Did you guys keep in touch over summer? Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, mainly because we were trying to find places.
Yeah. We were trying to find a house desperately. We just wanted like a space for the three of us to just be. But it fell through. But life happens.
Yeah.
We were checking in for like, the boys travelled a lot. So we were like, oh my gosh, how was your trip?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Any places of note?
Oh, I went everywhere pretty much. I was trying to just use the summer just to do everything. But I went to Venice first and I went to Paris. Then I went to some beach in Devon called Willacombe, something like that. Yeah, it's a very nice beach. I'm just chilled, man. Just trying to like sit.
I went to Portugal and that was it. I'd get very panicky about the idea of forgetting all the lines. So every now and then when I was like going to sleep, I would just be like,
yeah.
And I'd fall asleep like that. I'd really worry about, oh my, it's all going to go. It's all going to go. I'm going to lose my job.
But it was all right.
I can imagine though. We were talking in the office earlier about dreams that you have on show week when you've you're having the dream that you're forgetting your lines and you wake up sort of all hot and flustered. Yeah. So I completely, yeah, I can imagine it must have been sort of checking the script every once in a while and just reminding yourself, just refreshing it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but it's been incredible though. It's been like talking to the rest of the creative team as well. We've just been like, okay, so what should we do? Cause like they just know it. They're paying us to be here for a week. It's been fun because we've, you know, got new elements that we've been able to add and play with. Yeah. So it feels like a bigger, better show, I guess.
Mm. Lovely.
With lighting now as well, which is brings it to life.
Shout out to Jack, man.
Shout out to Jack.
Yeah. Sounds like he's been amazing.
Yeah. DJ Jack.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, yeah. Across such talented people on the school's tour, it's quite amazing. Mm. The show that the kids are getting is.
Yeah. Okay, so Ipswich Schools look out. 6 weeks to go, and it all ends up coming back here to NW2, where you're going to do two performances for the public. Tiny, tiny space for audience. Mm. So if anyone wants to come, they need to book straight away.
Yes.
And that will be the end, but that's far away yet. So good luck with the tour.
Thank you
so much.
All the best with it. Yeah. And thanks for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
In your lunch break. We know you're very, very busy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please tell your friends about us and give us a share on social media.
If you'd like to get involved with our podcast, please drop us an email to podcast@woolseytheatre.co.uk.
We have a full and exciting programme of shows, activities and events throughout the year. For more information, visit our website at woolseytheatre.co.uk or call the box office on 01437 295 900.
The New Woolsey Theatre is a registered charity and relies on funding partners, investors and donations. We gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England, Suffolk County Council and Ipswich Borough Council.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, is produced and managed by our friends at podtalk.co.uk and is the copyright of the New Woolsey Theatre.